The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the Washington Post and the News and Observer. Before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, I want to remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we'll be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. Today on Armchair Traveler, we're going to visit with a man known as a travel mogul. Now, he's also a philanthropist and a legal weed champion. Writer Natalie B. Compton takes us to visit the real Rick Steves, who she describes as so much more complex than the person you see on TV. Her article was published in the April 29, 2024 issue of the Washington Post. Now, to meet Rick Steves, Natalie takes us to his hometown of Edmonds, Washington. We begin. At first glance, it is hard to tell that Rick Steves is protesting. In the center of his hometown, America's favorite travel host is perched on the edge of a fountain roundabout, engaging in some friendly civil disobedience. As cars circle the intersection, Steve smiles and waves, looking more like an elf on a shelf than an angry picketer. This is his way of reminding people he wishes they'd stop driving here. Steve's family moved to Edmonds when he was 12, and the 68-year-old is still happy to call it home. Rather than relocate to his beloved Europe, he dreams of bringing some European sensibilities to the edge of the Puget Sound, less than 20 miles north of Seattle. Rick Steves, in this photo that's included, protests at the roundabout in the middle of town, and he's trying to close the car so it could be like a European piazza. Now, continuing the article, when he's not traveling around Europe, writing about Europe, or running his multi-million-dollar European tour company, the prolific TV host and author likes to squeeze in some local activism. The roundabout routine is his push to block off Edmonds' very American Main Street for pedestrians. If you squint at it, you can see what Steve sees. This would be the perfect place for a lively town square. I like a lot of things about Europe, but I love the urban energy of Europe. I love the piazza, Steve said, in a wistful tone you might recognize from PBS. We don't have a piazza, he says. Unfortunately for Steves, the voting majority of the city does not love the idea of parking their SUVs farther away to shop. So despite his Boy Scout enthusiasm, the most famous man in Edmonds must keep up the perch and wave. This is not his only crusade, however. Spend any amount of time with Steves and you'll encounter a total ham who loves a zany bit. But if you ask him about serious issues such as car-free zones, he'll bring up other causes that are dear to him. Affordable housing, supporting the arts, creating senior centers for the elderly to age with dignity. He's anti-Trump and pro-cannabis. He does not care if that is bad for business. The average Rick Steves fan has probably missed this side of him. On TV, they see an always sunny history lover who makes going abroad feel approachable for the average American. That's an incomplete picture, like thinking you know Paris because you've seen the Eiffel Tower on YouTube. Meet him in Edmonds, and he'll fill in the rest. Steves, according to this photo, wrote his first book with pencil and paper, and he self-published Europe Through the Back Door in 1980, as the caption reads. Continuing with the article, it may look like a lot of gallivanting for Steves, but being Rick Steves takes a lot of work. He spends 3 months of the year overseas researching, writing, recording, refining tours, updating guidebooks. If he's not planning or producing content, he's often doing promotional events across the United States. This year, Steves is celebrating the 40th edition of his first book, Europe Through the Back Door. Over the course of his career, he has built a privately held company that generates $120 million in revenue a year, published 110 books, filmed 12 seasons of Rick Steves Europe, and produced more than 750 podcast episodes. It's like coordinating a three-ring circus, Steve said. That is really fun, sort of exhilarating, and extremely complicated. And to pull this off, Steve does not observe the French 35-hour work week. He's a workhorse with a reputation for keeping a frenetic pace year-round. It's more of an American work culture, Amy Duncan, Steve's communication director, told me. He's an unapologetic capitalist, but he's also a socialist. He makes enough money to fly first class, but he sits only in economy, claiming he doesn't mind being cramped. It never occurred to me that I'm suffering, he said. As long as I've got an aisle and a seat that reclines, I'm happy. Actually, Steve believes airlines should have only one class. It's part of his egalitarian worldview. He's also anti-points and anti-miles, refusing to sign up for airline loyalty programs because he believes that they bully us into complicating our lives. Steve's also enforces a self-imposed carbon tax on his tour company, which takes more than 30,000 people to Europe annually. For every customer, Steve's invests $30 to atone for emissions created by their flights between the United States and Europe. Last year, that added up to $1 million donated to a portfolio of organizations, Steve said. I don't need to be a slave to the quarterly profit statement. I want to be around and profitable in 10 years from now in a world that you can travel in that's stable, Steve said. This is a smart investment, and it's an ethical expense that I should pay for. Rick Steves will tell you he's motivated by making money. The more he can earn, the more good he can do with it. Vicarious consumption, that's one of my things, Steve said. After amassing a windfall from the 2001 George W. Bush tax cuts for high earners, Steves donated $1 million to support the local symphony and performing arts center. In 2005, he used retirement savings to buy a 24-unit apartment complex for the local YWCA's use as transitional housing for women and children. He figured he'd eventually sell the complex and live on the earnings. After a decade later, he changed his mind and donated the complex valued at $4 million. He also gave more than $4 million to help build the Edmonds Waterfront Center, a vibrant gathering place for seniors where his daughter had her wedding in 2021. And he gave another $2 million for a similar center in the nearby city of Linwood, which broke ground in mid-April. Rick puts his money where his mouth is, says Nancy Leeson, a former Seattle Times food critic, who used to let Steve's daughter babysit her son. She has appreciated his regular presence in the community, which has entailed hosting events for local politics at his house and shopping at the farmer's market. He changed travel, local resident Karen Howe said on her way to the Waterfront Center with a friend. She has used Steve's guidebooks for years. He's introduced us to places that most of us would never think of going, she said. Steve's hasn't won his Piazza battle, but he has brought European touches to Edmonds. At the Rick Steve's Europe headquarters, there's an EU flag hanging from the mocha brick facade and gargoyles that drain rainwater, just like they do at the Notre Dame Cathedral. Gargoyles are scare away evil spirits, Steves points out, unable to suppress his inner tour guide. Here, Steves employs more than 100 people, editors, audio producers, tour specialists, and cartographers such as Dave Horline, his first employee. That's excluding the fleet of guides and drivers he contracts across the pond to shepherd tour customers. Inside, he bounds through a maze of cubicles, his neck craned forward, always at an eager pace. His six-foot frame appears leaner than in previous seasons of his life, but his signature look is familiar. No, not khakis and a button-down. That's vintage, Steve. These days, he wears dark jeans and a button-down plus a thin scarf and leather sneakers. During a day of meetings, Steve's fjord blue eyes lit up the minutiae at the business. He went over maps with Horline and longtime co-author Cameron Hewitt addressed problems such as finding a glitzy or a less glitzy stop on the Amalfi Coast that's not Sorrento. They discussed whether a place is worth visiting after it's gotten too popular, and Steve's indulged in some gallows humor. It's going to be like holding the corpse of a loved one who just died, he said. His critics argued that the Rick Steves effect can turn a charming village, restaurant, or museum into a tourist magnet. Matthew Kepnes, the travel writer behind the blog Nomadic Matt, points to the Swiss town Zermatt, which he says Steves put on the map and has since dealt with over-tourism. You're bound to bump into groups with Rick Steves guidebooks in Italy's increasingly crowded Cinque Terre. Whether Steves is actually to blame for changing the place is up for debate. There are plenty of destinations he's covered that haven't been inundated with swarms of Americans, and then in parentheses see also Gdansk. Steve says he assesses whether a place wants tourism, if it can handle it gracefully. If it doesn't or can't, he may mention it, but not promote it. He has faith, maybe too much, that his clients share his values. Does my work change the personality of a town? It can. Am I a dramatic impact on Europe? No, he said. There's a handful of places I really promote aggressively that I've had a serious impact on, but otherwise my travelers are the kind of people that take only pictures and leave only footprints. They're good travelers. On a Sunday sunny, as another photo shows, Steve's is seen playing a feisty game of pétanque at the local park. And we go on with the story. You don't have to spend much time in Edmonds to see why Steve's never considered leaving. The city, population roughly 42,000, sits on a majestic inlet. You can get to a major international airport in about an hour. The community is so courteous, it has an umbrella share program in case people forget their own on a rainy day. As Steve's walks around town, he greets people by name. He lives within walking distance to both his favorite diner and a pétanque court, a French answer to Italian bocce. He plays bongos at his church on Sundays. Now, we have here in 1967, Richard Dick Steve's moved the family here because he was worried about Rick Jr. So we're going to learn a little more about his early life here. And the quote is, "I was hanging out with some dangerous kids and going down the wrong trail," Steve said in a serious tone. His dad, an Army veteran, got by in the upscale suburb as a piano technician and importer. When Steve was 14, his parents dragged him on a work trip to Europe to visit piano factories. It was a radical experience that sparked his lifelong passion to travel. Back in Edmond, Steve started teaching piano, eventually turning his savings into trips abroad of his own, not only to Europe, but also Turkey, Nepal, Afghanistan. He went to college nearby, earning degrees in European history and business from the University of Washington, where he played in the Husky Marching Band. And then another photo shows him going on vacation by playing the piano at his home in Edmonds, Washington. Now, after graduating, Steve's figured he could keep up his routine, give piano lessons during the school year, then travel during the summer. He started teaching travel classes in the same recital hall where his piano students performed. This was back when there was no internet and there were few guidebooks to consult for trip planning. The classes were ahead. At 25, Steve's turned his lecture materials into a 180-page book and self-published Europe Through the Back Door in 1980. 4 years later, he hosted his first European minibus tour group, serving as both bus driver and guide. His business have evolved, or I should say businesses have evolved. His bus tours now take up to 28 travelers, a number Steve says is a sweet spot between making the tour more affordable, yet enjoyable, for customers and profitable for the company. But his mission has remained the same, to be the best resource for European travel and help Americans travel better. "I just focus on that, and I love it," he said. "It takes my life out of balance, which is not good, but it lets me do a lot of stuff that I believe in, and that's good." Steve's has been open about the challenges of being a travel mogul. As he built his empire, he was also raising a family. Being married to both took a toll. In 2010, Steve's and his wife Ann divorced after 25 years of marriage. Up the hill from his junior high, Rick Steve's modest beige home offers a window into his many lives. There are family photos on the walls, from older relatives to his baby grandson, Atlas. He hosts, and that's the name of his grandson, Atlas, and he hosts political fundraisers, not Atlas, Steve does, out on the sprawling deck. A painting of Kerala, India, nods to one of the favorite countries, and people forget that Steve's did 4 editions of Asia Through the Back Door as well. Next to his grand piano, there's a stuffed creature, what Steve's calls his silver fox, baring its teeth and wearing novelty sunglasses with cannabis leaves on the lenses, a nod to 2 of his interests, taxidermy and marijuana activism. "It's the civil liberties, it's the racism, everything about it is wrong," he said of keeping weed illegal. As for the toothy fox, Steve's doesn't do typical souvenirs anymore, but he makes an exception for stuffed animals. "The wooden shoes and the pewter Viking ships are so obvious," he said. "I like to do something a little more organic and a little more striking, and it takes me back there. I like it." He's a very good piano player. He can also play the sousaphone and the trumpet, which he did regularly during the pandemic, performing taps for his neighbors at sunset. The coronavirus was a nightmare for the travel business, but a miracle for Steve's love life. After running in the same social circles for years, he and Shelley Brian Wee, a prominent local bishop, started dating at the end of 2019. They had a lot in common. Both are progressive Lutherans. Both are divorced with adult children. But neither worked a typical 9-to-5, and one of them spent 3 months of the year in Europe. Then shutdowns happened. Steve's, who couldn't remember whether he'd ever had dinner in the same place 10 nights in a row, spent 100 nights at the same table with Wee. It solidified their relationship. Shelley is a constant, Steve said. He still struggles with the balancing act between work and love. When the stars align and they're both in Edmonds, Wee cooks and Steve's plays sous chef. They walk Jackson, Wee's labradoodle, creating their own version of the passeggiata, Italy's traditional evening stroll. They play table tennis before dinner. When the world reopened, they started traveling together. They've made time for a few vacations, a trip to Morocco, where they were caught in a windstorm that blew the windows out of their car, a luxury barge cruise through the Burgundy, France, that was embarrassingly expensive, Steve's confessed, followed by a week hiking in the Swiss Alps, and another hiking trip between remote lodges on Mont Blanc. Before their first trip, Steve's edited the contents of Wee's suitcase, because packing light is part of his philosophy. "What do you say?" she asked. "You're talking to Rick Steve's." And during the pandemic, Steve started playing taps, as we said. That's another photo showing him doing that. And concludes the article about Mr. Rick Steve's. So there's probably a lot more about that travel mogul than you probably realize, right? Well, a few years ago, I did some on-the-air fundraising for public television here in North Carolina, originally UNC-TV. It's now known as PBS North Carolina. And I still remember the great popularity of the Rick Steves Europe and other travel programs that he produced for PBS. And so it seemed that people could not get enough of his travel adventures, so I can understand. Well, from the world of Rick Steves, we accompany writer Andrea Sachs to explore adaptive equipment in making national parks more inclusive. Now, a photo caption shows a Great Smoky Mountains National Park bikes and kayaks aid visitors with disabilities. Andrea's article appeared in the May 1st, 2024 issue of the Washington Post. So let us begin. New resources available at Great Smoky Mountains National Park help visitors with disabilities explore hiking trails, go mountain biking, paddle kayaks, and camp overnight in the mountains of North Carolina and Tennessee. After launching a program of free adaptive activities last year, the country's most visited national park will expand the number and type of excursions this summer. The programs allow individuals with disabilities and their families and community to move beyond the pavement to explore and enjoy the Smokies, said Emily Davis, a public affairs specialist with the National Park. For its inaugural year, the National Park and its partners organized 3 hikes and 1 mountain bike outing for parkgoers who use adaptive gear. This year, the program will feature 3 hikes, 2 mountain bike rides, 1 kayak trip, and 1 night of backcountry camping. The outings are scheduled for select dates in June, July, September, and October. Davis said the staff receives daily emails and phone calls from people inquiring about the special excursions and adaptive equipment, which the park loans out through a separate program. She said messages come from locals and out-of-town guests planning to vacation in the popular park. Last year, more than 13 million people visited, according to the National Park Service. And so just remember to call the National Park Service if you're interested in these things. And the telephone number that we found is 865-436-1200, 865-436-1200, okay? Types of adaptive equipment. And by the way, the Park Service says they're trying to remove as many barriers as possible. All they need for you to do is to show up. And then we talk about the equipment. Catalyst equipment is available to anyone with a physical disability and caters to a range of special needs. Some of the kayaks and bikes are built for 2, ideal for people with visual impairments. The organization uses 3-wheel off-road bikes, trikes, for people who can move their legs but have poor balance, and hand cycle mountain bikes for cyclists without leg mobility. The bikes come with e-assist for powering through rough terrain or steep terrain. The hiking chairs have levers, easier to push than dirt-encrusted wheels, and a front wheel for steamrolling over large obstacles. The kayaks have outriggers to prevent tipping, and a custom seat supports people with limited abdominal functions. Adaptations are tailored for amputees and others with restricted capabilities. Participants can also bring their own gear. Folks who don't require special assistance are invited too. It's not just about making something accessible. It's about making it inclusive so that the entire family and friends can be part of it, said Mark Boghossian, the Director of Engagement at the Christopher and Dana Reeve Foundation. By offering these kinds of programs, the Great Smoky Mountains National Park is really making sure that everybody in the community has the opportunity to participate and enjoy nature and be active. The inclusive outdoors. National parks are becoming increasingly more welcoming to outdoor enthusiasts with mobility issues. In addition to its adaptive friendly excursions, the Great Smoky National Park has three adult size off-road wheelchairs and one junior chair available for use on accessible trails. National Park Service volunteers meet the guest at the trailhead for a safety overview and quick tutorial. The volunteer can accompany the hikers or wait at the trailhead. Davis said the park plans to expand its fleet as well as train more volunteers for this service. Several other NPS sites also provide all-terrain wheelchairs. Sleeping Bear Dunes National Lakeshore and Rocky Mountain National Park are beach wheelchairs, Golden State National Recreation Area, Great Dunes National Park and Preserve, Gulf Islands National Seashore as examples of where you can find these. Now, the rentals are complimentary. Because of the limited supply, reservations are strongly recommended. The movement is also flourishing on the state and regional levels. All Terrain Georgia supplies all terrain wheelchairs to do more than a dozen destinations in the Peach State, including Cloudland Canyon, Panola Mountain, and Cumberland Island. Tennessee State Parks and the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources provide the trailblazing equipment in 13 parks each. A number of other state park departments are also on board, including Kansas, Louisiana, Michigan, Oklahoma, and Wyoming. I do see the domino effect, said Carly Pearson, the ADA coordinator in Knox County, Tennessee. Other parks are catching on, she said. Pearson, a former National Park Service wildland wildfighter who suffered a spinal cord injury in 2002, said she assisted the Knoxville nonprofit Legacy Parks Foundation in creating one of the first adaptive mountain bike trails in East Tennessee. The Independence and Freedom Trail was completed in the spring of 2020. She said a number of local partners have since collaborated to develop more outdoor sites that can accommodate adaptive equipment. People with mobility issues said one of the biggest obstacles to exploring the outdoors is acquiring or accessing the specialized gear. The equipment can be prohibitively expensive, Pearson said. A fully kitted out adaptive mountain bike, for example, can cost $22,000. Do I want to pay for my son's college, or do I want to go and be selfish and buy myself a recreational piece of equipment? She said, no, I'm going to take care of my kid, of course. Specialized guides. Though loaner programs help adventurers overcome that hurdle, availability isn't always enough. Depending on the individual's capabilities, the visitor might need help settling into the equipment and navigating the unfamiliar trail or body of water. That's where the support team comes in. For the Great Smoky Mountains program, Gray said guests will be accompanied by experts from his team, including an adaptive mountain bike director who lives in Asheville, North Carolina, a hiking director who will oversee the day treks and backcountry camping trip, and an adaptive kayaking specialist from Knoxville. Park rangers will cover the educational portion of the outing, sharing ecological and historical tidbits with the group. For backcountry camping, Gray said guests will hike for about 1.5 miles, cook over a fire, and sleep in tents. They will rough it to a point. Instead of digging a hole for a toilet, they will have access to a portable commode. We're going to make it easier for them for their first experience in the backcountry, he said. Each national park shares information about its accessible trails and adaptive programs on its website and in its visitor center. For a broader scope, the Christopher and Dana Reeve Foundation created a search tool to help people locate accessible and adaptable programs, events, and resources around the country. The organization also has a team of advisors who can help with trip planning and other recreational advice, and that information, by the way, is free. The information specialists are trained to help people locate areas for adaptive activities, Boghossian said. They help them think about the question they need to ask as they plan their trips. Healing and restorative exercise. Matt Lee, a 43-year-old Asheville resident, suffered a spinal cord injury the summer after he graduated high school. He uses a wheelchair, which restricts his outdoor activities. Several years ago, he upgraded to a power-assisted device with off-road tires and a free-wheel attachment. His range of exploration improved, but he still runs into stumbling blocks. You can get to a certain point, he said, but there might be a creek or a stream or some uprooted areas or lots of rocks that are just too challenging to navigate. In 2022, he attended an adaptive mountain bike clinic hosted by Catalyst Sports. He said it was the first time he had biked that hard and that deep into nature since his accident. He learned about the Great Smoky Mountains program during the clinic and signed up for two bike hikes last year. For the first trek, he borrowed a passive Jolette, an all-terrain wheelchair from the North Carolina Spinal Cord Injury Association. He brought his own equipment for the second excursion on Deep Creek Trail. To venture off and experience being out in nature, it's a very healing and very restorative, he said. Now I've been able to get out there. I feel better. I'm happier. My overall well-being has improved. This year, he's considering the kayak outing and the backcountry trip, an adventure that is long overdue. I haven't really done overnight camping in over 20 years, he said, so that would be a new experience since my entry. And again, the number to learn about the service for people at the Great Smoky Mountains National Park, 865-436-1200. And if you want to check out the information at the Christopher and Dana Reeve Foundation, just go to ChristopherReeve.org. That's ChristopherReeve.org, ChristopherReeve, and there's two R's there, EEVE.org, okay? So there you go. Well, a couple of minutes left in our episode today, so let's take a moment to answer a question. Where's the best North Carolina cheeseburgers? Yes, writer Simone Jasper has some answers for us. She says it's a Lexington-area restaurant, and her article appeared in the October 7th, 2023 online edition of the News and Observer. A North Carolina burger joint loads its patties with cheese, and fans can't get enough of them. So much so, the Lexington-area restaurant now ranks as the state's best place to get a cheeseburger. Now, this according to results that were published in September 1, 2023. Nick's Old Fashioned Hamburger House topped the list after the View website Yelp studied comments that customers left between January 1st and July 20th of last year. The website said it ranked those spots using a number of factors, including the total volume and ratings of reviews mentioning cheeseburger. Now, why do fans love the burgers? Well, on Yelp, some customers raved that the restaurant constructed burgers with well-cooked patties, oozing cheese. Others praised the meat-to-bun ratio and toppings, which range from onions to jalapenos. Now, Nick's, which earned more than 4 out of 5 stars, took to Facebook to bask in its #1 ranking from Yelp. Yelp is a big deal in our world, and to have this recognition is huge, the restaurant wrote September 21st. We're so excited and can't thank everyone enough. So there you go. Head to Nick's for your next cheeseburger. And that, my friend, is going to bring us to the end of today's episode of Armchair Traveler. Be sure to listen next time and hope you've enjoyed today's journey. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and I remind you the content of our program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. The website again, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. The number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.